Welcome, travelers. I'm Josh.
I'm Glenn.
And I'm Lee Wanika, and this is Tabletop Journeys, where we will be your not-so-humble guides on the quest for RPG adventures.
Here at Tabletop Journeys, we are all devoted role players and storytellers at heart, and we absolutely love sharing our passion with you. On our show, we feature diverse tabletop RPG systems, demonstrating them through actual plays and breaking down the rules to provide you with tips, tools, and techniques to help you navigate them. We also love bringing the content creators behind these games into the studio to give you a peek behind the curtain with relevant and insightful interviews.
Let us help you get the most out of your story, no matter what game world or system you're playing, because detailed settings, heroic characters, diverse NPCs, and a focus on story over rules can make any campaign legendary. Now, here's a message from friends of the show.
When four strangers meet for the first time, they unknowingly begin to unravel tightly kept secrets about their worlds. This place sucks. This realm sucks.
I don't mean to interrupt, but maybe speak about portals a little quieter.
You know how some people aren't really into science and magic mixing together?
That's just a story. Portals haven't existed for hundreds of years.
Armed with little true knowledge, but unfathomable curiosity, these four strangers set out in search of answers and form an unlikely bond.
I do see you, and I'd like to think that I'll be there when you're ready to talk about it.
He kind of relaxes for the first time around the group.
You keep putting yourself in danger for others, but who puts themselves in danger for you?
Join Ivy, Varys, Alara, and Ziva as they dive headfirst into the unknown. Follow us at Rainbow Dice Club on your favorite streaming platform, and find us at Rainbow Dice Club wherever you get your podcasts. Do you trust me?
Welcome, everybody, to today's episode. One thing that I will say about our recording schedule lately is that it's been great. We've been doing some really awesome things, but man, I miss seeing you guys like every Tuesday night. This is a little weird. It feels like it's been a while since we recorded. Very nice to go ahead and see you again. Joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Mr. Glenn Myers, Mr. Lee Wanika Miller. How the hell are you doing tonight, Glenn? Nice to see you.
I'm doing pretty good. Happy Tuesday. Still chilling down here in North Carolina. About to change locations. I can't tell you where because Josh said that I'm not allowed to do that anymore. But we'll update next week.
Perfect. We are still living in boxes somewhat in the new house. So we moved here last Wednesday. We're still unpacking. I've unpacked a lot of my gaming books. I have not unpacked my dragons yet, though. So that's baby steps.
So yeah. The house is naked is what I'm hearing. Kids are not out. Therefore, the house is naked.
A dragon is out and the dragons are in the box that's directly to my right. So like
I'm it's not properly.
It's got skivvies.
Maybe not Nate. Yeah.
It's got skivvies. House
has skivvies, yeah.
So, and you can't put out your dragons until you've properly displayed the rest of your horde for them to be impressed by.
Yeah. This joke is going to go south in about 3, 2, 1, and Josh. So,
how about you, Lee Wanika? How are you doing tonight, sir?
I am doing very well, as I have talked about, and people will hear about it, I believe, in previous episodes, but I went to TotalCon in Marlboro, Mass. last weekend. Went Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I ran a Everyday Heroes game Thursday night. I ran a Star Trek game Friday afternoon. I ran an Everyday Heroes game Friday evening. I ran a Star Trek game Saturday afternoon. At that game, Al Spader, the freelance writer from Modiphius Entertainment and the lead writer on the most recent Klingon tactical book, actually sat at my table. Got to play on Friday with the folks over at Really Dicey. My table was their crew. So it was literally them and nice. And we had an absolute blast. And then Saturday night, I got to run chapter one of my Midnight Train Through the Mornlands adventure, which is a homebrew adventure that I've been working on for quite some time. I think we're actually in like the second year. I've been working on it a little bit here, a little bit there. Finally, think I have the final iteration on chapter one. And now when I run that, I'll be working on doing the playtest and the tweaks for chapter two. But fantastic event. And then I ended the weekend running Star Trek on Sunday morning. So a lot of great games, a lot of fun, almost no sleep. Re-entry on Monday was hard.
You're on a whole con. That's the way it goes,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah. I actually took that day off from my 9-to-5 job, knowing that it would be hard, thinking then I would be fine on Tuesday and everything would be raring to go. And I'm like, man, I could have used Tuesday also, but got a lot done, had a lot of fun.
When we were first talking about Total Con, I really wanted to be there with you, but it's just too cold in the north right now since I can't move south.
It's actually beautiful right now, actually. That's the irony.
It was like in the 60s almost the entire weekend or so. I was inside, so it didn't matter, but I didn't wear a jacket from the car to the building at all, and I drove most of the way with at least partial windows down.
But I did run a game during the Total Con weekend.
Awesome.
I was at TotalCon. I ran a Monster of the Week game for our Patreons.
Oh, Patreons. That's right. Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun. Marty and Heather had a blast. My wife, Trish, joined them. And they played one of the starter adventures, sample mysteries that are listed in the main book for Monster of the Week called Damn Dirty Apes. It's the same one that you and Quentin played with us.
Yes.
Lee Winika, with the demonically possessed robo monkeys with the railguns on their shoulders.
Yes.
Nice.
They were all just as disgusted by railgun flung poo as you were.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can imagine.
Not okay with that.
Yeah. I can imagine.
It brought back fear from my time in the primate house at the national park. And that's a whole nother story for a whole nother. Yeah.
They didn't like it when one of them dropped a scalpel in the railgun either. The poo was a better option.
Ooh. Yeah, fair enough.
Nothing worse than a poo-covered scalpel. Like that's and Lunica, hearing you talk about your Eberron campaign, I think that we're going to have to bring Mike Daniel back from 19 Hits of the Dragon because he's a huge Eberron fan, and to have you run an adventure for the three of us. Maybe invite some other folks to go ahead and drop some dice on that.
I would love to play with Mike again. That would be fantastic.
Yep, that'd be hot. We have not had Mike on in a very long time. So Mike, if you're listening to this episode, invitation is open. Let's do lunch. Let's do coffee. And
let's roll some fan-rolled dice.
Let Lunica run Eberron for us. So
we don't need to do lunch or do coffee. Bring your lunch and your coffee to the table.
Yeah,
exactly. So, but all right, let's get going on tonight's topic of discussion. So this is a topic that is somewhat temporal right now based on when we're recording it, but by the point that this episode airs, it will have happened a while ago. So we're going to start with a primer on what we're going to be talking about tonight. And we're going to be talking about the article that appeared in N-World about the rise and fall of evil genius games. Now, I want to start with admission is the wrong word, but just to go ahead and make sure that we are being transparent about this. One of the reasons why we're talking about this article and one of the reasons why this article resonated with us is that Everyday Heroes is a game that we were going to be working into our feature rotation, both with our Patreon games and stuff like that too. And obviously there are some things that we're going to talk about in tonight's episode that are giving us some pause on that. And we're still discussing as far as like how we're going to go ahead and do this. It feels somewhat akin to the OGL crisis that happened at the beginning of 2023 in terms of we had plans for this year in particular, and now we're kind of like, let's slow down and think about this. Kind of the same way that we talked about last year, whether or not we're going to feature Dungeons & Dragons content in the wake of the OGL crisis. So wanted to get that out of the way first, just being transparent about the fact that why we're keenly looking at this one. And
strong sense of deja vu.
It really is, yeah.
To be sitting here again going, all right, we have plans this year, but suddenly can we trust the brand we were going to partner with?
Exactly, yeah. So, Lee Winika, I know you as a Kickstarter backer of Evil Genius Games and specifically Everyday Heroes, I want to get your kind of like base level thoughts before we dive into the article as a whole.
Very similar to what Josh was saying, I think it's important for me to kind of be upfront about my thoughts on the game. My disclaimer is this. I was a fervent, amazing super fan of the D20 Modern System. back in the early aughts, 3.5. Anybody who knew me gaming knew that all I ever wanted to do was be able to get a major lengthy campaign in the D20 modern setting. Yeah. Didn't matter the game, didn't matter what specific genre within the game. I just always wanted to do that.
I remember reading through D20 Star Wars with you. That was like,
Always. I have the Farscape game. I have all kinds of books there. I got Babylon 5. If it was based on D20 Modern, I was pretty much buying it, guaranteed. When Everyday Heroes was prepping for their Kickstarter, when they said, follow this so you get notification when we launch, and they said that the DNA of this game included the folks who worked on this game that I loved from 20 years ago, I was all in. The only question for me was how much scratch I was going to be able to put together to get it. I was going to buy the largest package I could physically afford without starving my family. That is a bias, right? I love this game. No amount of love for a game changes how I feel about the way people treat other people. So I have great pause, great concern, great trepidation as I was reading this. I have read this article 3 different times so that I can, to the best of my abilities, check my biases at the door and make legitimate and valued decisions based on what we see, what we actually know, what we can logically presume, and further, how does that work in conjunction with similar or even different issues with different companies and how we are choosing to interact with them. So my bias is I have loved the game. My love for the game, the details of the game, has not changed. And nothing I'm seeing here has to do with the writers, the mechanics, or the game itself. It has to do with the management of the company,
the administration
that is producing this. This is an administrative issue, an administrative concern. The original content creators are not the individuals who are really being cast in a negative light by this article. I think it's very important that we make that clear distinction. Very similar to when we went through the OGL, we were fairly consistent. This is about the upline management. This is about the corporate interests. This is about the corporate direction and the corporate activities. And just because a person might be asked to not speak, that's not enough to hold them in disregard. Now, if they say some things that we don't like, that could be, not always, but that could be a separate story. But I think it's important that we separate the writers, content creators in many cases, and we'll look at those case-by-case situations, from the corporate entity, and in the case of this particular article, the individual at the top of the chain.
Yeah. So, Glenn, I want to get your sense on it now. So, Liwanika and I talked about the article a lot, both in our shared chat, and I mean, there were phone calls when I was in the car back and forth and stuff like that, where we hammered out a lot in this and had some pretty heated discussions about some parts of this article. As kind of, I don't want to call you like the newcomer, but as the one who came to the article maybe later than Liwanika and I did, I want to get your thoughts first. So, what did you think about what you read, and where did you fall on the spectrum here?
Okay, so before I answer your question, I have a follow-up question for Liwanika. When you were talking, Liwanika, and you were again reminding me of your passion for the D20 Modern system and all of the games that spun off of it, Everyday Heroes did deliver, and you have been able to enjoy the game, play the game, run the game. Does it live up to what you wanted it to be?
Absolutely, without doubt or hesitation. We actually, in January, ran the starter adventure for the Patreon. Had a blast. Actually, we did it in 2 parts. So we've done 2 sessions of Everyday Heroes with the patrons of Tabletop Journeys prior to this article even coming out. That was also a prep for me running this digitally at another event. And I ran it at TotalCon. So I've run the starter adventure 3 times. I also ran the first chapter of the Highlander cinematic event, which was balls out glorious. I'm telling you, it was balls out glorious. I got to run Highlander in 1429, basically a party of immortals defending Joan of Arc at the Siege of Orleans.
That's hot. Okay.
That is hot. Yeah.
So the game itself does not disappoint. Yeah.
No,
important to note, because of all the other stuff we're going to talk about, the game itself, the one that we're still up in the air on, does
this
not.
This game is rock solid.
Awesome.
Rock solid.
So to answer your question, Josh, then, about how I feel about it, and for my disclaimer, you're not wrong. I came to this issue as you two started discussing it, because I've been listening to Lee Wanika sing his expectant praises for Everyday Heroes for more than a year now as he's been working the Kickstarter and waiting for it to come through and then deliver, and how excited he was when it got here. And I know a lot of the other things that we've been talking about for some of the issues that are going to come up in the article that have to do with AI, you know, some of the other technological things that people aren't really comfortable with. But mostly what I took away from this and the constant shifting and changing of the story throughout it, the CEO, the guy running the show, the entrepreneur that started the whole thing, Dave Scott, basically fell victim to the same thing that WotC did. You know, he comes from a lot of other startups that he's done, a lot of other companies that he has elevated or straight up founded, all in a very technical market, in a very internet-based market. And he came at it from that perspective, from this digital space business mindset. And they don't understand how this role-playing hobby community works, that we're not just out for the next new biggest shiny, that we're not just going to buy the next video game because it's got the best graphics, that we are concerned about how our content is made. We're concerned about whether or not the people that create it get paid properly, whether or not they have rights to their work, whether or not they have the ability to legally carry their career forward based on their skills. So coming at it from the perspective of like, well, you're just going to take it, our community won't. And coming at AI and AI generated art and some of the other digital tools that are really being brought into question, our community is already saying that we value these people's contributions and we don't want their copyrights and their livelihoods to be stripped, and trying to stuff it down their throats anyway. In his own company's boardroom and his own company's creative teams, they were telling him, no, we can't do this. And he kept trying to do it anyway. So honestly, it really, again, felt deja vu-y. It was like Hasbro's big business marketing team trying to interfere with the tabletop space, getting their butt kicked, followed by a self-proclaimed serial entrepreneur, basically a guy whose job is to start up companies, not stay with them, not maintain them, not grow them, not make them better, start them and leave them. That's what a serial entrepreneur does. And trying to apply that mindset to the tabletop RPG space. They just don't fit.
Yeah. I will say that where I first learned about this article was from a friend of the show, Josh Heath, as he posted about on Facebook. And basically the extent of his comment was that, I guess I'm not going to be working for Evil Genius Games anymore, or something along those lines. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but basically, I mean, Josh does a lot of independent work. And basically the implication was that this wouldn't be a project or a company that he wanted to get behind anymore. And I think that while it's really easy to look at the pay issues, because that's the thing that really got me, is like, no, you got to make sure you pay your people. And there are a lot of reasons that they had that problem, right? And we can dive into that a little bit too, but I think but there are legitimate reasons why they ran into that difficulty. Thank you, Netflix, right?
But is it really thank you, Netflix? Because the reason that Netflix pulled their contract was because Evil Genius Games was in breach, because Dave Scott chose to show material that he did not have, like franchise material that he did not have permission to release to the public yet, at a convention, at a game announcement, a pre-launch thing for the Rebel Moon tabletop RPG. So they legitimately pulled their contract for breach and for leaking information about their coming IP that they were under an NDA not to disclose.
Yeah. Totally legit. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead, Leonie.
On that point, though, there is some serious contention. What you stated, Glenn, is exactly what Netflix put in all of their legal briefs as the reason they did it, and that may or may not have been believed and or adjudicated in the decision behind the settlement. However, the contention on Evil Genius's side prior to said settlement, which they did have a really solid and relatively lengthy YouTube video on, which was pulled down once the settlement happened. So you can't find that. At least I haven't been able to find it since. On the Evil Genius side, about that convention, what has been stated, not only in that video and by one or two other folks, I can't quote the names at the moment, but is that Netflix was present when said breaches were there. They were aware of what was going to be said in and on those panels and were effectively shoulder to shoulder while that happened. So there is a certain amount of, at any point, Netflix as an organization could have said, you can't talk about that. So there is some back and forth on that issue. It is not as clean as this article would put out there. And as we're about to get into it, I had some really big issues until I reread it the second time with the way in which this article was written. It had a very specific slant that
all articles do.
Many articles do. This is the kind of article that needs to. And I'm fine with that in and of itself. But I do take that into account when we're talking about legal matters versus what is claimed versus what is counterclaimed and what is actually known. And some of this is in question. So that is the reason they pulled it. But the reason the suit came out is they felt that wasn't a good enough reason to pull it. So that's in contention. And I don't believe this article speaks to that well. They don't mention that they contested that assessment. So they clearly took a side on that issue and didn't even mention that there was another side to that discussion. Effectively, the article comes across as Netflix pulled their money, these guys whined about it, and they claim that's why they're broke. And while those are independently likely inaccurate statements, there's a lot more to it than just that. And that is one of the things the first time I read it, I told Josh, there's a bunch that this article doesn't say that makes it hard to have a confirmed opinion about what goes on. If somebody were to present me with all the details, quote unquote, I could easily change my opinion on that. But based on what we have, I basically have two people who, by definition, don't agree, saying opposite things. Without that evidentiary knowledge, which we won't have because there's been a settlement, that leaves me saying, what else do we know about this situation? What else can we do? So if you take the culpability out of the issue regarding the money, it's a fact. They were expecting this money to pay these people. This money wasn't there. That's just a fact. Doesn't mean that they made good business decisions, and they probably didn't. But one of the things that they did specifically state was there are a lot of promises by Dave Scott that at least one or two employees said, yeah, he likes to talk future state, and it wouldn't it be nice to? And I really didn't hold much credit to it beyond that. I took those statements to mean this is what he hopes we'll be able to do, not I'm guaranteeing we'll be able to do that. And I think that's a very telling statement. Doesn't make him a person I want to do business with, but if I'm to be pejorative and very quote unquote black and white about the issue, evil or stupid are two very different things. I may not want to work for a stupid person, but that doesn't necessarily mean I'm not going to buy a good game from a stupid person. And I think those are some of the things that I am weighing. I don't think at this stage of our conversation, I'm ready to deliver my final opinion yet. But point by point, I think you're going to find I have a lot of thoughts as we go through this article in that direction.
So I will say, though, that you're not wrong. And I meant what I said about every article, because unless it's written by an artificial intelligence that lacks its own perspective, it can't not. Anything a writer writes takes on some of their own bent, no matter how hard they try to stay objective.
Yeah.
However, comma, every article you ever read is going to be slanted in one direction or another. It's just a matter of how bad. But just based on that, we could say the same for every other point we're going to talk about in this article.
I think you're absolutely correct. I had some issues with the content and its presentation here, which is why when we get to my final conclusions, I think it'll be important for me to point out some of those things that are not there that I've looked at in some other ways. And there is one thing that I found out well after our last talk on this, Josh, that did not come up in any of our conversations, which could potentially give me a different thought than I had ever had on this issue.
All right. I definitely think that we want to go ahead and get to final thoughts here. There's one other kind of major piece of this puzzle that I want to talk about, and that's the AI piece of it. Mm-hmm. Before I get there, just a couple of observations on your point, Luanika. I think the first thing is, one thing that makes it seem a little dodgy to me is that when Evil Genius countersued, they also hired a PR firm to go ahead and turn the tide of public opinion about them writing the game. That's not something that somebody who feels they were actually wronged in a contract does.
I would disagree with that. I think that probably happens more than we notice. And I bet the issue is they probably have enough money to hire PR firms that are better at masking their existence. Right.
But this was in November of 2023. They stopped paying their people to hire a PR firm to turn the tide of public opinion against Netflix.
I absolutely agree. And I have serious, grave concerns and dislike for that decision.
Yep.
However, what the article again makes fairly clear is that Dave Scott was convinced he was going to win big. And so he pushed all his chips in, figuring, I'm going to win big. Right. Netflix is going to back down, and then I'll be able to pay. Yeah. That's an idiot.
The problem is he didn't just push his chips in. He pushed his chips, your chips, and Glenn's chips in too. Yeah,
absolutely. So, and like I said.
And yet somehow, while he wasn't able to pay his employees during this because of being stifled by Netflix, he was still able to pay for other programs and live appearances. And he tried to straight up buy a company.
Yep. Not a nice guy.
I think that we got a little bit confused when I was talking about that Netflix pulled because of his breach. What I meant was that what we've got isn't just, because I know we're not going to see the whole story.
Sure.
But we've got a guy who's playing fast and loose with the rules and changing what he's saying, just following this or any of the other things that I've looked into, who's saying one thing to one set of people and one thing to another set of people. He made his own bed. Whether or not the exact words from this article are confirmed and correct for why Netflix chose to pull their contract. But Netflix didn't just wake up one day and be like, we don't want to be in business with this person. Netflix saw the things that we're seeing and talking about and that the article is showing, regardless of what the exact piece was, because we're never going to know that. You're right. Unless you're sitting in the room, you're never going to know. But Dave Scott, or something about his business dealings and his company, made his own bed.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And Netflix, I guarantee you, had a reason for trying to pull away from that company, whether the reasons cited in this article are accurate or not.
We could do a whole show, and it is a bit outside of the purview of Tabletop Journey, so we probably won't. But we could do a whole show on the business moves that the streaming industry has been doing over the last year and a half. And I am not necessarily a fan of the way they've been doing things, but that's a whole separate thing. So I don't have a lot more to say on that other than, they could have reasons. They could have said, I really don't want to do this. The real question is, was what they saw enough? Well, it was enough they felt they could get away with it. And by virtue of how little they had to pay out at the end, they did get away with it to a certain extent.
Get away with it, or a court of law agreed with them?
I think if the court of law agreed with them, there would have been no settlement.
About what we can confirm and what we can't. And
right. I think if a court of law agreed with them, they would have paid zero because that's what they wanted. So they did not get what they wanted, at least not what they stated in writing they wanted. They got a settlement. And while that happens all the time,
it happens
the real question
every
is how much of that did they expect to have to pay versus what they did pay versus what was contracted versus what was asked in the lawsuit. That could go any number of ways. I think the court of law agreed on some points and disagreed on others, or at least expressed that they would, because a settlement happens before a court of law makes a decision. So there was
court
decision here. So there was enough information in what did happen that they were like, I'm willing to give up X so we don't have to go any further. And maybe it was that PR firm. Maybe it was other things. Who knows? But I think that piece of it is less important than the details of Dave Scott's AI dealings. And a quote that he said about himself, "I'm a serial entrepreneur." And you mentioned it in your opening statements about this issue. This is a guy who just constantly does startups. His modus operandi is not to stay indefinitely. It's to build up to a point where it can be sold for more and he can get out and do the next thing.
Yeah.
And in the tabletop community, we don't like that. We want people who love this game. So you have a serial entrepreneur who at least initially surrounded himself with gamers and creatives and independent content creators.
He was smart enough to hire the right people. He just wasn't smart enough to listen to them.
He did listen to them. He was smart enough to listen to them. And then he made other decisions that were not good, pissed them all off, and then they left. There are valid concerns there, but I'm not convinced at every point in this article that there was adequate service provided to all sides of the equation. I think this was definitely an interview with the ones who had the biggest axe to grind and may not.
It's totally an expose. It's written in an expositive style. The title of it is The Rise and Fall of Evil Genius Games. It's definitely written from the perspective of, look at what Evil Genius Games did.
And here's the interesting thing, and this is what really turned me off about this article, is that title. The company hasn't fallen. Yes, they have had hard times. Yes, they've had a bunch of people left. But there are a bunch of game companies that have 6 to 15 people, a bunch of them. That's not unusual. Actually, having a company of this type having 30 and 40 is what's actually unusual. And while this article specifically is exposing and creating an issue that could result in much more negative things happening and does put a lot into jeopardy, and I'm not saying people shouldn't do articles like this at all. I'm not saying that, so don't take this as that. But to talk about the failure of a company before they failed in the past tense is weird to me, especially when your article will be one of the largest pieces of creating that failure. I have an issue with that.
Okay.
I'm not even going to go down this rabbit hole with you, my friend, given all of the conspiratorial headline clickbait things that you put into the chat that totally come from an insanely slanted point of view.
Yeah, I've got 2 points to go ahead and feedback on that. The company has lost 85% of their employees. To go ahead and say that they are not falling is wrong. That's wrong.
Falling and fell, or I think they're
talking about the rise and fall, as in they are falling right now. The fall.
I didn't read it that way. I read this article as past tense.
I read it that they've lost 85% of their employees, and it's probably fair to go ahead and say that the company's on the decline.
I didn't expect this heated of a discussion when I signed in this.
That's okay. I did. The other thing that I wanted to go ahead and say is I question how the article can be biased when 5 of the 6 remaining employees at the company responded to the writer of the article. I'm not sure what else you expected.
So the author did go through and add counterpoint. He did put in the responses from the company, but to Lee Winika's point, because it is an expositive style article, it is written from the perspective of the people who feel wronged. And paragraphs are given to the other employees. And then half a paragraph is given to the corporate response, or a paragraph and a half to what Dave Scott said in reply. And then paragraphs of defamatory information. That's the style of expository writing where you're actually providing the counterpoint. You're not denying it, but you're going to blow up the part you're focusing on and you're going to minimize the other part because that's not what you're focusing on. It's not specifically to be obfuscative. It's to focus on the material you're trying to present, but make sure you include the others for journalistic integrity.
Yeah, because nobody is saying that the 6 remaining employees of Evil Genius are like the plucky people that are going to keep the train on the tracks. The story is about the mass exodus and everything that has happened there and the reasons why that happened.
That's they went from 30 employees that were committed enough to work for free for three months.
Yeah. Only to go ahead and
6 employees
and to eventually be made whole within the last 2 weeks.
a certain level of commitment to go without your salary for 3 months. Yeah. I just want to make sure that's clear when we talk about, like, they said, hey, would you guys mind if we just didn't pay you for the rest of the year because we're out of money and you stay and you show up and you go to work every day anyway? That's somebody who's committed to what they think the company is doing.
I do want to get to the whole AI angle.
I want to get there as well. I think on that pay issue, there was a few pieces within the article that said some things that I questioned on specifics about how this was done. They talk very little and, in my opinion, did not explain well how many of these employees were contracted by project and or salary by nature or regular hour. Now, there's a bunch of shenanigans with how they book time, how many hours they work, how many hours they got credit, when they were putting in those hours, all of that, which I think that's bad, period. Regardless of whether they get paid or not, when you start messing around with when you expect people to work and when you don't, I have issues with that. But it did not break down either by percentages or by the person who made X comment or X quote. Were they people that worked on the Netflix project? Because if they were cut by contract, which means you get paid when we get paid, and they didn't get paid, yes, they would have potentially worked X number of months or X amount of time without whatever. Evil Genius has been trying to, as part of this settlement, and it was something they successfully got, pull the non-IP stuff out of what Netflix has, so that it can be turned into a product. And they have talked about that they now have those rights. They are planning other things with that. So if that's what some of those folks were working on, and they were contract working based on that project, there might be some merit. I am not in a situation where I've ever worked in some kind of fashion like that. As a starting content creator, if I got a job working on a game I really like and I believed in the vision and it was, you get paid when we get paid, would I take that job? Probably yes, if I thought in the end it would work out, if I believed in that vision and I believed we were going to get there. If I halfway through found out we're probably not going to get there, do I then bite my tongue, stuff it out till hopefully I can get some kind of recompense? Again, probably yes. But at the end of that process, once I get paid and I walk, because under those circumstances I would, I personally think it would be disingenuous for me to say I worked 6 months without pay. I contracted to work until they got paid, and I got paid within a week and a half of them getting paid. The problem is the article doesn't separate who wasn't getting paid and under what employment contracts or rules they were working on. I dislike that I don't have enough to make that value decision. I have enough to say I don't like how they handled it. I think there was problems with how they handled it. But my belief that they were 100% and totally wronged would really depend on whether or not I knew what their contract and what their rules of employment entailed. And that's what, again, one of those points where I think the article got me about three quarters of the way there. And actually three quarters of the way to their side, going the rest of the way, I think there's information that we didn't get in this article. Here at Tabletop Journeys, we've leveled up our game and we're prepared to make your next role legendary. We've just started a partnership with FanRoll Dice, and they have over 300 product options to choose from. Gemstone, metal, new liquid core dice, and so much more. Better yet, listeners to the Tabletop Journeys podcast can get 10% off on their orders when they follow the link below and use discount code PODCAST10. A portion of these purchases come back to us, and this is a great way for you to help support the show.
So I want to go ahead and talk about the other kind of elephant on the bench here about the, without saying the technological ethics of the company, certainly the technological ethics of Dave Scott, right? And his, Glenn, I think you called it out perfectly, how it's, he kind of waffles back and forth about his desire for artificial technologies and NFT type technologies and stuff like that, whether or not they are the cornerstone of the projects that they're working on, or not. It seems like depending on what answer he feels the person asking the question wants, that's the answer that he gives. Because he's come out and said that Everyday Heroes will not have AI-generated content in it, while at the same time saying that there will be this ability for individualized items to be blockchained as NFTs, so that the example that they use is that if you play a game when a sword kills a dragon, that sword is now unique across the entire ethos of the game and can be sold independently. First of all, that sounds very video gamey. It doesn't sound very tabletop, for one. But for two, I'm not sure how that to him means it's not, and I'm making air quotes here, but nobody can see it, in the game, right? It's either in the game or it's not. And if he's using that as a revenue stream to go ahead and fund the game, it's in the game. If players can trade their special sword and sell it to other people, it's an aspect of the game. And so I'm not sure how he's squaring that circle. And that seemed very disingenuous to me.
So I think part of the issue with this whole scenario and everything that Dave Scott has said and done in regards to digital assets, that whole the AI stuff in general, the individual purchases and NFTs, and how that impacted the way his former team responded. The challenge is the timeline is extremely truncated. And so we are hearing about statements made at one point that are followed by other statements. I think when you made the statement, these are all being said at the same time. They're not. Many of those statements were what was said and not the most recent thing said. And if I can codify my thoughts on it based on what I read in the article, is this. It seems very clear that Dave Scott believes in AI, believes it's going to take over, believes it's going to be fundamentally a part of what's going on. And he was trying to build into Evil Genius Games the ability to leverage that when that time happened. What he didn't recognize was while he was able to sell venture capitalists on that concept, he was not able to sell his creative team and his company on that fact.
Yeah. And the TTRPG community. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the issue with Dave Scott is he convinced himself that he would eventually get them won over. So one of the things that I saw throughout the article was he never pushed forward, i.e. put it in a product that hit the shelves or even a Kickstarter while the team was saying no. What he did do is every other month, effectively, try to resell them. And what happened was that white paper he did at the end of December or early January was one of those attempts. And once they all got paid, the rest of the staff said, and I'm out. I'm done with you trying to sell me on this, and I'm out. Before the and I'm out happened, he had put what I understand to be the final word on this on their webpage, and that is a code of ethics, at least if you believe what they say. So that's my caveat. If you believe what the company puts out was being worked on prior to this article, it did not publish until after the article by
just
today.
Just to clarify that, the white paper was published on December 28th. The technology code of ethics was published on February 6th. So it's about 6 weeks difference between when the white paper was published and when the technology code of ethics was published.
Correct. And the article came out 2 days before the code of ethics was published, or 1 or 2 days before that.
Which article do you mean?
Blockchain. The article we're talking about, the N-World article, published 2 days before the code of ethics.
No, the N-World article published on February 14th, so about a week after the technology code of ethics.
Oh, really? Okay. I actually heard that different. The source I had looked up on that said that the other way around. But at any rate, the last word that I know of from Evil Genius Games is a commitment to not have it in any Everyday Heroes products. So he's committed because the gaming industry, the tabletop community, has spoken on this issue not to do it. I think he hates that. And I think the net result is probably as soon as he can unload Evil Genius Games, he will and get out of it. Because what he really wants is to be in that technology business. He thought this was a vehicle to get that. And it has become not. So the issue was a disparity between his end goal and the content creator's end goal and the community's expectations. So when we get the final thoughts on Everyday Heroes and Evil Genius Games as a game production company, I don't think Dave Scott's with them for long anyway. And the game, if it's solid, remains. But if we bankrupt the game or boycott the game, then who's going to want to buy it? And he's out anyway. He made a commitment not to do a thing. There's some questions as to, can we trust him? Will he try to sneak something in? But guess what? I have those same questions about Watsy because they keep trying to sneak stuff past too.
You can't say he's out anyway because he's not out yet. That's like saying the company's done when it's not done, my friend. Only time will tell. But I do agree with everything else that you said because that's 100% my take. He's a serial entrepreneur. That's what he says, self-proclaimed. What a lot of career serial entrepreneurs do is they look for exploding markets and then try to make something in that space so they can build it quick and then get out. You're absolutely right. And between the fact that, yeah, AI and blockchain and the Web3 controversy, they're still very controversial, but they ain't going away. And the government's not in any hurry to start actual regulation on it. So we're going to see a lot of things going up and down on that. Makes total sense to me that Dave Scott wanted that piece to work with this piece. Why he chose the tabletop game industry, I don't know him enough to really get that, but we are booming as well. But the two just don't fit. And he's learned that now, I think, based on the statements that he has put out since, with a straight up promise from the company not to include AI. I think he's finally gotten the message. But I think what we saw for the back and forth through the original points in that timeline was exactly what you're saying. He knows that the people he's hired don't want it. But he's like, yeah, it's okay, we're not doing it yet. So I'm just going to tell you we're not for now, and I'll win you over later. And kept hoping to be able to bring it in bit by bit. But he was stonewalled every time.
Yep. And then
so now all we've got is the future to see if they abide by the promise they've put out and whether or not the company progresses in a good direction. But you know, I do agree also with the sentiment that Mr. Scott will be out as soon as he can find a way to have covered his losses.
I think, Josh, you opened us up by saying this has echoes of Watsy and the OGL. It's a different particular topic and issue, sure. But those echoes are right there. And I think the time frame was very truncated, largely due to the size of the company. If you look at the percentages, they are exorbitant, again, because of the size of the company. But if you look at the trajectory of what Watsy did with the OGL and the layoffs that happened in December, by the way, not the only two tabletop companies that did layoffs. Many did.
Sure.
And while this company had 85%, again, they had 30. There's also the whole MC Hammer effect. Did MC Hammer need an entourage 60 deep? He absolutely didn't. Did he foolishly, and these are his comments, not mine, was I a fool? Was I an idiot and did it anyway? Absolutely. And at some point, all them fools had to be let go because he overextended. We could go back and forth on fail or not fail or are they dead? Are they not dead? But they have products that continue to come out. They continue to come out on time. There are people continuing to pick up Everyday Heroes at the Citadel, our local shop. So it's one, a good and powerful game. And it's anecdotal. I am not a statistician. I obviously have got a very limited sample size, but I don't see anything on a grassroots level that shows a company that has failed. I show a company that is severely struggling and has a remarkably difficult path to any kind of maintenance and growth, but I don't see fail. And again, that's where my issue with the title comes in. I think maybe fail.
Sometimes you think of that word too hard, failed. We fail all the time. That's how we learn to move forward. They have failed. Going from what they were and the revenues they had to not being able to pay their employees and going from 30 to 6, they have failed. That doesn't mean they're out. That doesn't mean they filed for bankruptcy and they're never going to work again. But in their previous endeavors and what Dave Scott thought he was going to be able to bring to the company, that has failed. But that doesn't mean they can't rise again. And that's what I'm saying about the future. All that we have left is to see what happens in the future for Evil Genius Games. And hopefully it'll be a good one, because as I said, that's why I wanted to make sure in the beginning when I asked you before we started all of our back and forth and some of the negativity that was going to come out, how was the game? Was it everything you wanted it to be? Because
and more.
That's and the more. Most important part. Did they make a great game that will, you know, bring fans to this hobby? Yes. And are we reasonably confident that they made this game without using AI art, etc.? Yes, because at that point, they were still saying no, and all of the creators were still in place saying, we don't want to do this, and stonewalling him. So hopefully he's learned his lesson, and it moves forward in a great direction. And if we're voting evil versus stupid, I would go stupid.
Yeah, I think that's ultimately where I landed after
three articles through. I will throw this out there because we're winding down the hour, and it is something that I absolutely was not aware of prior to. I had watched many YouTube videos with David Scott on it and not realizing that was David Scott. I thought that was a paid speaker. So I will say a couple things positive about it. He's a great speaker. I think most CEOs probably are. I wasn't aware that was the guy. The other thing that I wasn't aware of, and it does not appear to have been any part of this issue, what I've realized yesterday in prepping for this episode is Dave Scott is one of a very small group of CEOs in this country by percentage. He happens to be a Black entrepreneur and CEO. And I have some wonder as to how much that has factored into any of the negative reporting on him as an individual, even if that is rarely or not at all mentioned. Because oddly, it was my third Google search tonight while we were doing this before I actually saw his name and picture together. If you Google him, you will see a bunch of YouTube things, and you don't know if he's the person pictured or the person who's about to interview Dave Scott. And I found that to be an interesting factor. I have no idea whether it plays into this, but in the interest of full disclosure, living in a world where not too long ago, there's a big legal case that largely went on the basis of a person of color in a leadership position chased out of a job. Whether they did right or wrong things really wasn't the question. It was how much of the vilification had more to do with that than what they did.
And no, absolutely.
I think it's important to raise that question here.
And whether or not it applied directly to any of the points that we were discussing from this article or not, just by growing up as a person of color, he's had to deal with those types of things his whole life. So it's definitely impacted his story and impacted the way that he approaches things. There's no way to know how much it did or did not factor into these events, but I'm sure it's factored in. It's been a factor in his life. So
interesting.
All the three of us agreed. We really do feel on the evil or stupid meter, this pretty solidly falls into the stupid. And I think, like I said
in my comment there in the chat, less evil genius and more Dr. Evil.
Yeah. $1 million.
He wishes he had $1 million.
Exactly. I'm sorry, folks. I had to make that joke. It was actually too good.
Yeah, baby.
Behave. As I think our audience really wants to know, what are our plans for the game? I know our patrons enjoyed the game. I know the 10 people I gamed with playing Everyday Heroes enjoyed it. I know there were several people that came by hoping that somebody bailed on my table so they could come into the game. Everybody absolutely loved it. So I think I feel fairly confident that I would love to run this game again. I can certainly in my home games or at my local store, and hopefully in some capacity as part of Tabletop Journeys, because it's a fun game. I think my ear is going to be on the railroad track and my eye is going to be looking as information happens, because there were some of these things, even though it's Dr. Evil and not Evil Genius, that are right on the cusp of this might be a road I can't travel down any longer. This is not a done story, and I think I personally feel comfortable holding off our plans. So it's not something we're going to do next month or the month after, but kind of like WotC and the OGL, our level of discussion limited for a while till we felt comfortable that it was something we could get back to.
Yeah, I think we need to see what are the next chips that are going to fall, right? This is just the beginning. I'm not sure what happens next. I'm not sure what happens with Mr. Scott. I'm not sure what happens with Evil Genius. And so we'll see.
I would agree. Honestly, I'm okay with running it because we already have the game, and it is a great game, and our fans deserve great games, right?
Absolutely.
And we've established that we don't think there's anything bad in it. But yeah, we definitely have to see where the company's going. Actually, I've changed my mind. I will not put my stamp of approval on Everyday Heroes because I have not played it. So until Lee Winnika, you run a game for me and Josh and Mike from 19 Hits the Dragon and Steve from Dads with Nerdy Ambitions, I refuse.
I like that. I think I might be able to do that. I have Universal Soldier coming to me sometime soon.
Oh, wow. See, now you had to get Highlander, but Universal Soldier could be a good time, too.
Yeah. I'm all ears. But, Glenn, I'm glad you said that because one of the last conversations before Josh and I said we're going to table it, save everything for the show because we actually purposefully stopped talking about it
once we decided
we were going to do a show on it. And that was when we put in the chat, hey, Glenn, some homework on this one. Let's get ready for Tuesday. At that point, I left Josh with this statement. At the end of all this, I think I learned my greatest lesson from Glenn in dealing with WotC. At the end of the day, it's our game now.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what they did. This in our hands, next to our dice, it's our game now.
And like you said,
as long as what's in it hasn't been altered, I still feel comfortable running the game. Will I necessarily do it in a public forum such as on Tabletop Journeys or for air, so we're promoting a company that we have some concern with? Probably not. But in a home game at a store amongst our crew of close friends, hey, let's just have some fun today. Maybe at a faculty retreat with the folks over at the RPG Academy. I think in those closed scenarios, I have zero issue with this game.
Right.
As
and none of that is to say that we've decided that we're not going to have it in Tabletop Journeys. We're going to wait and see where the chips continue to fall.
Exactly, yeah. I will just one other quick, and I don't want to belabor the point. I don't think it matters, like, not what they did. If they hadn't paid their writers, if they were using AI art behind the art director's backs, if there were a bunch of shady things that they could have been doing to go ahead and put this game together, that would have made me say, no, we are never touching this game. Those things seem to have not happened. And
good point, because like, you're absolutely right. We all
everyone
feel
seems to have been paid. There are some questions about how Mr. Scott treated his employees, which, you know what? That is...
Those things can come up in any company and every company you've ever worked for in your entire life.
Again, he may not be a good person, but that does not necessarily impact my ability to enjoy the game. Other things could have, and those things seem to have been false. So that's at least
and Josh, good,
so.
You said it perfectly. It's not that there aren't things that would make me not play a game. It's just the things that would make me not play a game
have
not at this point appear to have happened.
Yep.
As we get new information, if any of those things appear, the opinions stated today by this not so humble host will absolutely change under those circumstances. Right. Those who've known me for a very long time have known me to be fans of, proponents of various individuals in pop culture in the world until I learn a new piece of information. And I will drop anybody if they cross very specific and certain lines. This situation got close.
Yep.
But we do not appear to have crossed that threshold.
Yep.
Cool.
Anyway, everybody, that is our show for tonight. So obviously, we would love to go ahead and hear your thoughts on the article from Evil Genius. Did you back Evil Genius's Kickstarters like Lewinika? Have you been made whole? How do you feel about how this is going on? We'd love to go ahead and hear your comments. Please, you can leave comments down below on the episode. You can always engage with us on social media, in our Facebook group, on X, on Blue Sky. You name it, we're there. You can go ahead and contact us. We'd love to go ahead and hear from you there. So we're recording a couple of like our traditional discussion episodes here in between our AP featurettes. Early in the year, we had Sentience, and then we had We Can Be Heroes. We're starting to put together a slate more of those for the rest of the year here. I know the work that Lewinika did at TotalCon this weekend, securing some context. We're hoping to get some nice, hot, fresh indie creators here on the air in the coming months.
I might be able to give a little bit of spoiler with the caveat. Ooh. The schedule hasn't been solidified just yet, but it looks like we have a fantastic and amazing artist and game creator which will be returning to Tabletop Journeys, hasn't been with us since before their very first Kickstarter, and that would be Jay Moores of Fae. He has had two new supplements come out. He does not have a new Kickstarter, but he really wants to sit down with yours truly and play the latest supplement.
Yep.
I had the pleasure of running my first Evil Genius Games game in the same room while he was running Fae. And there were times when we were on a little break so people could bio or whatever, where I craned my head to see what was happening over at the next table.
Hey, so, I would be happy to sit down and play some Fae again.
Very excited to play again.
Bigfoot needed pants, and he enjoyed some fountain fried silky.
That was a lot of fun. Absolutely. Looking forward to that one.
We will be in touch with the community with some solid info, but it looks right now that would be our next featured game.
So indie creators out there that are listening to the show, make sure that if you want to come on and do an interview with us and run your game with us so that we can go ahead and showcase your efforts, please drop us a line. Let us know. We would love to go ahead and talk to you about having you come on the show. So anyway, that is our show for this week. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. Appreciate it. Have a great night.
Good night, all.
Thank you for joining us. This has been Tabletop Journeys. We would love to hear your feedback on our show today. Join us at www.ttjourneys.com, where you can subscribe to the blog to leave comments and see all the content that we publish beyond the podcast.
You can also stay in touch by subscribing to our Twitter, Tumblr, or Instagram at ttjourneys, joining our Facebook group, Tabletop Journeys, or by sending an email directly to podcast@ttjourneys.com. Our full episodes come out every week on Friday, and every Tuesday features actual play and gameplay showcase episodes. Looking for early access? You can support the show and get episodes before everyone else at www.patreon.com/ttjourneys. Check it out today and see all the awesome benefits we bring to our supporters.
Lastly, if you're listening to us on Stitcher, iTunes, Podchaser, Spotify, or Audible, you would really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe to the podcast on that platform. Thank you for listening and for being a part of our growing community. And we bid you fair tides, friends, for legends await.